You're listening to Mockingbird. This recording was made at the 8th Annual Mockingbird Conference, held at Calvary St. George's Church in New York City.
Okay, everyone. Thank you so much for coming. I guess it's time to dive into Stories of Grace. I have been teaching a class at the church where I serve in Charleston, South Carolina, off and on in sort of multiple incarnations in the last few years called Stories of Grace. And all I really do is share poignant stories, vignettes, articles, poems, things like that, that I think talk about and describe and explain what grace, at least the tip of the iceberg of God's grace, looks like on our horizontal plane. That usually means places where human beings find themselves to be suddenly surprised by love. And I'm talking about grace in the context of love when it's not deserved, when it hasn't been earned, when there's been an instance of trespass, where a person does not see it coming. Those are the moments in movies and film and in thinking about the gospel that I find to be incredibly profound. So these are not stories of grace in a sort of general sense of God working in the world. I had an experience yesterday that's the kind of story of grace that I'm not going to be showing you today, where I was in a playground with my daughter in Central Park. And I was sitting with my mother-in-law, and I looked over at a little cute girl in a princess dress on the playground. And I remember, oh gosh, Daphne has one of those at home. She could just as easily be that kid. What a cute little girl. I get it. And a few minutes later, I took my daughter to the swings and was pushing her. And the mother of this little girl in the princess dress said, "Are you John Zoll?" And get this. It turns out that little girl is my brother Simeon's goddaughter. And it was Heather Grizzle, who just moved to New York City from England, where they've been living for the last many years. And so that's kind of a cool God instance, something like that. But that's not really the kind of stuff that I want to talk. What just happened? Let's see if we can get this going again. Sorry. So what I want to talk about are instances of grace that are the ones I talked about a moment ago, where love ambushes you. And in order to do it, I'm going to show you just some of my favorite clips I've collected. I collect these. I have something that I call my master list. Did things crash? Not sure. Because I think that this paradigm that we're so obsessed with as Christians, and especially here at Mockingbird, that we sort of just love to swim in the waters of over and over again, never really gets old and never really gets fully digested and never really gets exhausted. And I am not showing these clips because I think that these are equivalent to the gospel message. These instances of love are not the gospel. They are expressions of the kind of love and the dynamic at play that we see so profoundly and fully realized in Christ's compassion for the world, and including sinners most prominently. Whenever you start to talk about grace and to delve into these waters, there are many themes that come to the surface that we talk about over and over again at Mockingbird, and they are things that we've heard talked about brilliantly by Will McDavid a moment ago. They were pointed to in this morning's breakout session. And they are things like law versus grace, sort of finding righteousness through our performance versus being treated as though we're righteous even when we're not. Another classic word for that is imputation. I'm going to show you instances that capture those dynamics at play. Another big one is this idea of low anthropology, which is the idea that people in and are themselves are not as impressive as my daughter's Montessori teachers want to think we are. You know, so my daughter says, "By myself, Daddy," and her teachers hear that she's really finally developing autonomy and that that's a good thing. And I hear, original sin being trumpeted as a virtue. And so I'm kind of I like Montessori, but I like grace for sinners even more. And I'm not as impressed with human nature as some people seem to be. So we'll look at a little bit of that. But what I want to warn you about is that whenever you get into the waters of grace, you start talking about real life, at least if you're going to get into any serious examples. So that means these clips I'm going to show you here now deal with some very heavy themes, themes that are pretty close to the bone. But I think that's great and important. And why can't we do that? If anywhere we should be engaging with real life at its most raw, I think it should be in the church and as a, you know, fruit of our faith. The only other thing I want to say is I really believe in illustrations in ministry. I think illustrations get a bad rap. They're not present enough in ministry. And as far as I'm concerned, if you really want to sell these ideas, or if you really want this life-giving proclamation to take root in people's lives in a way that helps them or causes them to see that it matters, then you really, I think, illustrations are the best way to do that, to bring the ideas down to earth. When you get into this material and this gospel message and this idea that life could might not primarily be about our activity, but the volition of God as a lover of people who are relatively paralyzed in their ability to solve their own problems, it's like you enter into a whole new world where everything starts to flip upside down. Yesterday in a subway, I saw a guy with a board, and it said, "Need a miracle." And right next to him, there was a gentleman playing the saxophone beautifully. And both of them had little buckets out for money. Now, the sort of pre-gospel engaged John Zoll would have quickly gravitated toward giving money first to whom? To the sax player, right? Because he was at least trying to do something in order to earn some help. Where the other guy said, "Need a miracle," and was doing absolutely nothing. Now, when you get into this material, you think, "Oh, I will always give money to that guy first," because I just have come to value a whole different set of principles. And so let's look at what it looks like when sort of the world gets flipped up on its head. This is a scene from a movie called Sleeper, and in it, a man has been cryogenically frozen in the late 1960s. He owns a health food store and is totally health obsessed in a way that almost is, he would have owned a wheatgrass mill or something like that in today's day and age, but this is the 1970s idea of health food shopping and organic, very careful dietary concern and curation. And he is brought back to life in the future. And the two doctors who have unfrozen this man are asking, talking about him. They say, "Did he ask for anything? Did he make any special requests when we unfroze him?" And he did.
Well, he's fully recovered, except for...
Yeah. All right, Lino, we're going to need to turn it up. I'm going to turn this down just a hair. Here we go.
Well, he's fully recovered, except for a few minor kinks.
Has he asked for anything special?
Yes, this morning for breakfast, he requested something called wheat germ, organic honey, and tiger's milk.
Oh, yes, those...
Did he request anything? For breakfast, he requested wheat germ, organic honey, and something called tiger's milk. Right, very, very healthy stuff.
Those are the charmed substances that some years ago were felt to contain life-preserving properties.
You mean there was no deep fat? No steak or cream pies or hot fudge?
Those were thought to be unhealthy. Precisely the opposite of what we now know to be true.
Incredible.
In the future, it turns out that all the things we thought were healthy have turned out to be unhealthy. And all the things that we thought were unhealthy, hot fudge, deep fat, steak, and whatever, have turned out to be healthy. And this is sort of just a funny portrait of how the gospel message sort of flips things. So here we go. We're going to dive in now to a scene. Remember I said I was in Central Park? The first two scenes here are sort of tributes to grace in the context of Central Park, New York City. The first one comes from the famous movie Kramer versus Kramer, a very powerful film. And in it, Dustin Hoffman has become a single-parent father after his wife has left him suddenly. At least he didn't see it coming at all. He was a completely career-obsessed guy in the ad agency world who suddenly, overnight, has to become a completely focused single parent raising a very young boy. And he ends up rising to the occasion. He ends up learning what it's like to be a single parent. He ends up learning what it's like to put his son ahead of his career. And his career suffers as a result. And he becomes friends with a neighbor down the hall who also is a recent divorcee and has, I think, two children. And the two of them become friends. It's nothing romantic, but they are in a similar plight, a similar situation. And so this is a scene where they've taken their children to Central Park to a playground to play. And they're talking to each other. And there's a huge amount of sort of shared experience going on here and appreciation for each other's lives. And they just have a very close paralleled situation. And that right there holding the airplane is Dustin Hoffman's son, the one he is now raising on his own. We need sound. Any thoughts, Lino? I need to adjust the output. We'll get there. Thank you for your patience. I'll tell you a quick story, Grace. My second date with my wife just down the street at a raw, organic, crazy zany health food restaurant that I thought was kind of cool and quirky and had plenty of conversation fodder on the menu. I got her to agree to go out on a second date with me. And I was doing a pretty good job. Everything was going really well, and it was sort of my dream girl. And at the end of our meal, the waiter brought the check, and I gave my card, and they went back. And a few minutes later, the waiter came back and said, I'm so sorry, your card's been declined. And I thought, oh, dear Lord, red flag city, that's it. And Deirdre, my wife, paid for our meal, and I figured that was it. And by the way, it wasn't a mistake. My card was rightly declined. And and she ended up calling me the next day out of the blue and saying, hey, I just want you to know, I had a really good time with you last night, basically opening the door for me to ask her out again, and we went out on another date, and the rest is history. So let's see if we have sound. Nothing. Should I try a different clip? Okay. Kramer versus Kramer bites the dust. It's no problem. Let's see if this works. Let's just see if we have sound, and then I'll tell you what it is.
Peach?
Yes, we do. All right, this scene comes from a great movie called My Bodyguard, and it's the story of a little boy a high school kid who moves to a new school, and he's small for his age. And there are a bunch of bullies in the school. And he starts hearing rumors on his first day after these bullies have already targeted him and started, you know, beating him up in the bathroom and in the playground and all of that. And he starts hearing stories about this apparent crazy kid who there are rumors that this kid is going to be coming back to school. And the rumor is that this kid is so crazy, he actually killed another kid. And the kid shows up about a week into the school semester, and he's really tall for his age, and all the bullies are afraid of him. His name's like Linda Mueller or something like that. And, well, this small guy comes up with his brilliant plan. He says, I know what I'll do to deal with the bullies. I'll become friends with the guy that the bullies are afraid of, the scariest guy of all. And turns out this poor kid, the big guy that all the bullies are afraid of, is actually comes from an incredibly broken home, and that the rumor that he killed the kid is not altogether untrue, because you see, he was playing around with a gun with his little brother in a bedroom, unsupervised, one day, and the gun went off, and his little brother died. And it turns out that this boy blames himself for the death of his brother. Well, his new friend, this little guy, invites Linda Mueller to come to the hotel where his father is the manager, and he warns him, he says, I've got a crazy grandmother, played by the inimitable Ruth Gordon, Maud of Harold and Maud fame. And Maud is zany, and she doesn't play by the rules at all. And they immediately welcome this very shut down teenage boy who blames himself for his brother's death into their life. And this is what happens when he is brought into their family.
You run a nice, lively hotel here.
Oh, thank you.
Are you Lindemann? Would you care a trip for life? Fantastic. Come on.
Mother? No.
They're worried. She keeps alienating the guests at the hotel. She's very flirtatious. And so she gets shut down. She says, Lindemann, are you Lindemann? Would you care to trip the light fantastic? And they shut her down. So they go to a table.
Let's go eat some. Go like this. Drop the bowl, kid. Hey, hey, terrific hotline. You got a lot of girlfriends?
No, ma'am.
I'm talking in the future, smart guy. You're also very intellectually inclined.
I think that's in the future, too.
I have to be right about something. Are you sure this is your hand?
Wish I could deny it.
What happened to your wrist?
Nothing. Accident.
Let me finish. Open up, Ricky. You're among friends. You're among friends. I see a long lifeline. Very good, very valuable.
You're back. Saying things.
See that? She's pretending to read his palm. And everything she says about him, he says, no, that's not true, that's not true. And then his buddy says, hey, what's that? Points to a big scar on this young man's wrist. And he says, that's nothing. And he clenches his fist and he pulls it inside of his shirt and away from them. And she grabs his hand and she pulls it back. And she says, I'm not through with you yet, kid. You're among friends, Ricky. She opens his hand, And in the next scene, after that moment when vulnerability is exposed and not held against him, we see him smiling for the first time in the movie. And that is the beginning of a complete change of heart in this boy's life. It's powerful. Rent it, My Bodyguard. Next, back to Central Park. Let's see if we can get this one working. This is from an old movie called The Best of Everything. Maybe you've seen it. It's a little dated, to say the least, but I think the datedness of that is actually something we can laugh at together, I hope, and not just be offended by. In this movie, we're going to become familiar with a young girl from the country who's moved to New York City, is working as a secretary in some office, and she is seduced by a city playboy, a young guy. And so, watch this scene. He's pretty slick.
We have to stop.
Why?
We just have to. Can't you change the record or something?
I like its message.
No, you mustn't.
No, no, no. Is that all they taught you in school? Give a course in yes, you know. Look, April, how much longer do you think I can keep storming the Citadel?
Dexter, the way you talk.
The way I talk, the way I act. You don't like anything about me, do you?
I love you.
Then show it.
I do.
Not the way it counts.
Dexter, I can't help the way I am. Oh, please, I was having such a wonderful time.
Well, spread it around. Look, come on, April, I'll take you home.
Dexter... Would you ever marry a girl who wasn't pure?
If I cared for her and wanted to be with her the rest of my life, then nothing would matter.
Dexter, I love you so much. Do you love me?
Of course I do. Believe me, baby, I have nothing but respect for you.
Of course I do. Believe me, baby, I got nothing but respect for you. Could you ever love somebody who wasn't pure? So, the thing that she thinks is going on there and the thing he thinks is going on there are two very different things. And in a little while in the movie, we discover that she is pregnant. And she's told, to her delight, that he's going to pick her up one afternoon, very soon after this news comes to his attention, and they're going to go to a small church where he apparently knows the local vicar who will marry the two of them quietly in a service. And so this is a scene where she is waiting for him to arrive with her best friend, who she's let in on the secret that she's going that day to get married to Dexter on the other side of these events that she's only confided in her friend about.
Bride beautiful.
Dexter here?
Just drove up.
How do I look?
Oh, lovely.
Oh, I'm so scared. Oh, I wish Greg were here.
I do too. She hasn't called since yesterday. She usually calls in at least. The bridegroom?
Hello, honey.
All set.
Congratulations, Dexter.
Don't be angry.
Well, she had to tell somebody. You have time for a toast?
No, thanks, Carolyn. April, we better get going.
You don't need an old rice thrower, do you?
It's nice of you, Carolyn, but everything's all set. Ready, darling?
My suitcase is there.
Right. Goodbye, Carolyn.
Good luck.
Carolyn, I feel so strange. I feel like, I don't know, like something's missing.
You and Dexter, you're together. That's all you need. Now you go out there and you'll be the happiest bride God ever made.
I'm glad I told Carolyn about us. It's not the sad things you need a friend to talk to about. It's the happy things. Are you sure we're going the right way?
The anchor's up. No turning back now. Want a drink, Charlie?
No, maybe. The minister won't like it.
Put this on, Ellie. It'll save a lot of questions.
Hey, aren't you rushing things a little?
April, when are you going to grow up? Now, put this ring on.
I don't understand. What did I say? Look at me, Dexter. Aren't we going to Maryland to be married?
No.
Why not?
Because I'm taking you to a doctor.
A doctor?
April, what else can we do?
We can be married.
How can we get married? You want to print a banner and run it up a flagpole? Shotgun wedding? What do you want to do? Tell everyone to send the kid's birthday present 6 months late for the rest of his life?
I won't have an operation. I want this baby.
You'll have other babies.
I'll die.
You won't even feel sick. It's very clean, like a doctor's office. I'll take you there and I'll be there with you.
How do you know so much about places like that?
Oh, April, word gets around.
Did you ever make a girl pregnant before?
Not that I know of.
You mean some girls became pregnant and didn't even tell you?
Some girls don't.
But how could they not tell you?
Maybe because they think I wouldn't believe it was mine.
But you know this one is yours, don't you?
Yes.
Dexter, don't you love me at all?
If you must know, I never really thought about it.
I'm not going. Let me out.
Are you crazy? We're in the middle of the park, April.
I don't care. It's my baby and I want it. Let me out.
April!
My baby.
That would. April. I'm sorry.
Well, it isn't as if I knew her. Where is Dexter?
April, do you want to see him?
No. I'm so ashamed.
Honey, you loved him.
Not anymore. Carolyn, now I'm just somebody who's had an affair.
Heavy. All right, now let's cut to the end of the movie. There's a dialogue between two women here that is just sort of taking place in the middle of what you need to see in relationship to that scene and series of events. Don't get too distracted by it. We're watching for our main character that we're tracking with.
Aha. More Subway Davies. Ronnie's coming to breakfast again.
He just called. He's been on duty all night. He's had two broken legs, three babies, and one psychopathic.
Now, don't get carried away, April.
Oh, no. Ronnie's different. Imagine finding somebody who knows all about you.
Well, somebody who knows you as you really are and likes you anyway.
Well, that's it exactly. No wonder David Savage loves you. You're so smart.
1 egg or two, Greg?
None. I'm not hungry.
You just said you were starving.
I did. Carolyn, if you ever have a free minute, I'd like to talk to you.
Fine. I'm free right now.
Oh, it's not that urgent. I just meant sometime.
Well, what about lunch? Or dinner?
I may be tied up. I'll call you.
Hi, Doc.
Greg, if you just wait a second.
I'm late now.
Where are you going?
Oh, someplace.
Morning, Carolyn.
Hi, Ronnie. More samples?
Whole new batch. Here's a pill for stomach aches, colds, and corns. This one cures measles, mumps, and tired eyes. This little pill is a homesick pill. And here's a pill for which there is no sickness.
Got anything for an old-fashioned headache?
Of course not.
Bye-bye.
And this is for you. Three more of my socks with holes.
Yes, doctor. Coffee?
I love that she can't wait to sew his socks with holes. But do you see what's happened? The doctor, who was there, who received her, who knows everything about what happened, who was there to deliver the news that she lost the baby when she threw herself out of the car in Central Park, so ashamed. Who would ever want to have, a relationship with me? I'm just a woman who had an affair. In that moment, falls in love with her. And they end up getting married. And it's an amazing, moving, redemptive scene of a person who is fully known in the place where they feel most guilty and most vulnerable. And anyway, it's a nice story of grace, I think, and a little tribute to New York City. That's called The Best of Everything. Now let's look at a more... Should we try Kramer versus Kramer to see if there's any sound on it this time? I just want to see.
Your babysitter, Aunt.
All right, we've got sound. Here we are, Kramer versus Kramer. Remember, single father with the single mother neighbor.
I just wouldn't say where you were or anything. Come on, tell me where you were.
Well, I, my French professor finally asked me out.
When?
The other day.
You had a date. I knew it. I knew you were keeping something.
No, well, you know, I told you I thought he was a pretty neat guy, right?
Right.
So we go to dinner.
Yeah.
I find out he's married.
Yeah.
He's deep in analysis. And get this, he starts to tell me his
wonderful
life story. And all I can think of while I'm sitting there is that I'm paying a babysitter
Daddy,
$3
look.
And a quarter an hour to listen to his problems.
Right.
Daddy, look.
Billy, take that out of your hand.
I'll get him. You know, Charlie
right.
Isn't
you hear me?
What you call generous with a box.
Billy! Watch it!
Daddy,
rest your head. We're almost there.
My eyes, Daddy.
Let me see. Let me see. Where's the emergency room?
Why don't you tell me how this happened, huh?
He fell off.
That's the jungle gym. Oh,
jungle gym. Well, you had a plane.
It's just about through.
Don't hurt him.
I won't hurt him, please. Mr. Kramer, can I talk to you for a second outside?
Yeah. Can she come in here?
Absolutely.
Margaret, you want to come in?
Come in here, please.
Okay.
Stay, Daddy.
I'll be right back.
I'll leave to him right now.
Stay.
All right?
Stay.
I'm just
yes,
outside. Stay.
He'll be right
stay.
Back.
I'm just outside.
It's all right, darling.
I'm going to just
stay,
talk to
Daddy.
The doctor. Okay?
He'll be right back.
I'm right here. Is he going to lose his eye?
No, he's not going to lose, but I'm going to have to take some stitches.
What do you mean? How many?
About 10.
What?
But don't worry about it. Because of the position of the wound and the boy's age, there won't be much of a scar.
Okay.
Now, this will take about 15 minutes, so will you just step over here?
No, if you're going to do something, I want to be in there with him.
There's no reason for you to be in there, Mr.
Yeah, there is. He's my son. If you're going to do something to him, I'm going to be with him. That's a good boy. You're really brave. You know that? Okay. That was a big one, huh? That was a big one.
Stop it.
Big one. Okay. Okay, we're almost done now. We're almost done now. We're almost done now.
How is he?
He's okay. He's sleeping. It's okay. I can do that.
Ted, I'm so sorry. I feel completely responsible. Well, I just don't know what happened. I mean, one minute he was there, and the next minute he was lying on the ground.
Oh, come on, Margaret. Now, listen to me. I want to ask you a favor, okay? Okay? It's not a little favor. It's a big favor. Now, if something were to happen to me, I'm not saying anything that's going to happen, but it's like, you know, a building fell on me. I just want to know if you would consider taking care of Billy. I mean, I just want you to know that I put some thought into this. And I can't think of anybody else that I would trust with. And I know you'd be okay with him because you're a good mother. Lousy dishwasher.
Okay.
You're all right.
Isn't that remarkable? See what happens? So much grace, just infusing that scene. Imputing. But anyway, what happens there is that he asks her, in the moment when she feels like she's just shown herself to be a terrible caretaker of children, she turned a blind eye at the exact moment when the child, she was supposedly going to grab him, and he fell, and that's what happened. And she blames herself completely. And after all of it's happened, he goes to see her, and she wants to apologize for what a terrible job she did looking after his kid. And he says, "Will you become my child's guardian if anything should ever happen to me? You're a great mom." And it's just amazing on multiple levels. So there's another little New York tribute, a story of grace. Let's look at a few more. This one comes from a few years ago. It's a speech that Robert Downey Jr. gave. Maybe you've seen it. You're probably aware Mel Gibson did some very deplorable things, said some very awful anti-Semitic things a few years ago, and, you know, has been totally blacklisted pretty much from Hollywood as a result. And Robert Downey Jr. gave this speech recently. It surprised a lot of people.
Actually, I asked Mel to present...
Let me just say, do you remember Robert Downey Jr.'s own story? He was a notorious drug addict. Nobody would work with him. And he's now, you know, the darling of Hollywood. Everybody loves him almost as much as Bill Murray. I mean, he's the most loved person in Hollywood. And but his story is one of real redemption. So let's watch.
This award to me for a reason, because when I couldn't get sober, he told me not to give up hope, and he urged me to find my faith. Didn't have to be his or anyone else's as long as it was rooted in forgiveness. And I couldn't get hired, so he cast me in the lead of a movie that was actually developed for him, and he kept a roof over my head, and he kept food on the table. And most importantly, he said that if I accepted responsibility for my wrongdoings, and if I embraced that part of my soul that was ugly, hugging the cactus, he calls it. He said that if I hugged the cactus long enough, I'd become a man of some humility and that my life would take on a new meaning. And I did, and it worked. All he asked in return was that someday I help the next guy in some small way. It's reasonable to assume that at the time he didn't imagine the next guy would be him. Or that someday was tonight. So anyway, on this special occasion, and in light of the recent holidays, including Columbus Day, I humbly ask that you join me, unless you are completely without sin, in which case you picked the wrong industry, in forgiving my friend his trespasses, offering him the same clean slate you have me, and allowing him to continue his great and ongoing contribution to our collective art without shame. He's hugged the cactus long enough.
How many points do I get for finding a clip that actually has the words clean slate in it? But there we see a person putting his entire righteous reputation on the line in order to wash clean the soiled reputation of another, using Christian justification for doing it, even talking about the woman caught in adultery. As the reason for him taking that approach, not to mention an advocation of a sort of theology of the cross position, that life of faith is a lot like hugging a cactus. It's not so much a way around as a way through or into the wind. So let's now look at two more. This one is near and dear to my heart. It's my second favorite movie, probably. It was made by the man, William Wyler, who directed... David, what's the time like? Okay, I'm just going to show you two scenes from this. This is The Best Years of Our Lives, my second favorite movie. Lots of movies like Kramer versus Kramer have a moment of profound grace, and that's all I'm looking for. But occasionally a movie has four or six even. That's a masterpiece. Or my favorite movie, Redbeard by Kurosawa, which has about 25 stories of grace contained in its movie. And this one has about nine. And this is the story of a man who's lost both of his arms in an accident. He was a submarine, worked in the belly of a submarine, and in an explosion on the submarine loses both of his arms. And he returns home to his small hometown in upstate New York with two hooks for hands. And he's very adroit. He's been well trained to use them. He can light cigarettes with them and all this kind of stuff. But he's deeply afraid that his girlfriend, who he's hoping to marry while he was away at war, is going to reject him when he gets home because of these. He thinks that the world will see him as a monster. And so this is what happens when he returns home with two other military buddies. Rent this movie, The Best Years of Our Lives. Here we go. This guy, by the way, won an Academy Award. His name is Homer.
This is my street.
And his girlfriend's name is Wilma.
15, 17.
It's the fourth house from here.
I wonder if Wilma's home.
Say, how about the three of us going back to Butcher's place? We'll have a couple of drinks and then we can go home.
You're home now, kid.
Well, so long.
So long, Homer.
Where next?
Just a minute, Bud.
Wonderful.
She plants one, hugs him, in no way changed in her feelings about him, but he doesn't believe it. And he spirals into a dark depression. He spends most of his time in the garage firing a rifle at the wall. And he's convinced that she can't really love him, and he totally shuts down, and he refuses to return her advances. And finally, her family feel that she's become obsessed with this guy who's not only deformed, but also who is crazy. And they try to ship her off to live with an aunt. And the night before she's supposed to leave town, he's in the kitchen alone, and there's a knock on the door. Pouring some milk. Boom, there she is.
Wilma, what are you doing out this hour, night?
I saw you were up, Homer. I saw you through the window. I've got to talk to you.
All right, come in. Want some chicken?
No, thanks.
Sure?
Yes.
Want a glass of milk?
No, thanks, Homer.
Sit down, Wilma.
Homer, my family want me to go away. Tomorrow.
Where?
Up to Silver Lake at my Aunt Vera's place.
That ought to be nice.
But I don't want to go. I want to stay here. You see, the reason they want me to go is so that I'll forget about you. They figure you don't want me around. You don't want to see me. And if I go away for a while, maybe I'll get all this out of my mind.
Maybe that's a good idea, Wilma.
He wants her to go, too. For her sake, he doesn't want her to have to marry a person who will require so much care and attention and constantly be drawing stares from other people whenever they walk around town. And he finally says, look, let me show you what it's really like. I'm going to show you me. He thinks he's going to finally scare her off. He says, come upstairs.
I've learned how to take this harness off. I can wiggle into my pajama top. I'm lucky I have my elbows. Some of the boys don't, but I can't button them up.
I'll do that, Homer.
This is when I know I'm helpless. My hands are down there on the bed. I can't put them on again without calling to somebody for help. I can't smoke a cigarette or read a book. If that door should blow shut, I can't open it and get out of this room. I'm as dependent as a baby that doesn't know how to get anything except cry for it. Well, now you know, Wilma. Now you have an idea of what it is. I guess you don't know what to say. It's all right. Go on home. Go away like your family said.
I know what to say, Homer. I love you. And I'm never going to leave you. Never. I told you I loved you.
I love you, Wilma. I always have, and I always will.
How about that? And then, just so you see what the full metaphor for grace really looks like. In the face of powerlessness, being totally loved and not abandoned, they get married. And her family's not happy about it. Doesn't matter.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered together here in the sight of God and in the face of this company to join together this man and this woman in holy matrimony. If any man can show just cause why they may not lawfully be joined together, let him now speak, or else hereafter forever hold his peace. Homer, wilt thou have this woman to thy wedded wife?
I will.
Wilma, wilt thou have this man to thy wedded husband?
I will.
Who gives this woman to be married to this man?
I do.
Now, Homer, will you take Wilma's right hand in yours and say after me, I, Homer, take thee, Wilma, to my...
That is grace. The hand that takes the hook and holds it committedly, unfazed. Finally, from my own life, a few years ago, I was serving at a parish in Charleston, and I worked every week. I would take a communion service to a retirement community with the elderly called the Palms. And I loved those people, and they were very sweet, most of them at the very end of their lives. We would have communion together using the Book of Common Prayer. It was beautiful. My wife was pregnant a few years into my time there, and I will say they started doing a bunch of road work and construction on the route that I had to take in order to get from the church to this retirement home. And it often used to be the very end of my week, and sometimes I'd be really tired, and I did it every week. And one day I was really just not feeling it at all. And I still went. I was probably a few minutes late. And when I got to the room where we met for our service every week, the first thing I noticed on the big table where we would gather was a big thing of balloons. And then a staff member said, turn around. And they said, surprise. And suddenly I realized that these folks were throwing me a baby shower. How do we get this all the way? Now, most of these saints right here are dead today, but I know all of them. And this was grace as a moment that I just couldn't believe it. Think of what it takes to plan a baby shower. Now, think of what it takes to plan a baby shower when you're 90. You know, they probably risked other people's lives driving in carpools, very questionably, from the retirement home to the shops. This woman right here, Aldous, who's no longer with us, is blind. And as I walked into the room and realized what was happening, She said, I suddenly heard a voice behind me, said, I'm here, am I too late? And I turn around and blind Aldous is standing in the doorway, feeling the doorway with one hand and holding a present with a bag with tissue paper in the other hand. And these folks just blew me away. And then they said, but what we want you to do is take all of this home to your wife, who we realize we've never met, but we want her to know how much love and support you have from us. So at the end of our time together that morning, they then wheeled all of these gifts down the hall on their walkers and on their laps in their wheelchairs to my car. This woman right here didn't have any legs, and they put them in the car. This woman right here knit an entire canary-colored bonnet and sweater and matching booties. She must have worked months. And this guy we buried just recently, a deacon in the church who was also Supreme Court Justice in South Carolina. And so anyway, every once in a while you get completely blindsided and it changes your life. And it's what really this is all about. And I hope that this is helpful. So thank you so much for coming. All right.